This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
This is a song that's been on repeat for a while here, the last few weeks for me. A guy named Role Model. And the song sounds very alt-country, but he's like a rapper, which I find somewhat interesting.
Huh.
Yeah, he's not like, it's just a dude. His name is Role Model. But I love this song. It's called Sally, When the Wine Runs Out. It's really, really good. You can find it on the Bumper Music List, which I will publish a little bit later this hour. All the songs that we play, I put up there on the list. Maybe one or two people check them out, but I appreciate those of you who do. We have our Fish Fry Friday tour continuing this Friday at Assumption Parish. Come out and see us. We'll be there. And as added incentive, I'm going to have cookies. I've been baking like crazy. I made regular chocolate chip. I made chocolate chip. I made chocolate with white chocolate chips. I have my dough is chilling right now, Sue.
That's
I'm making white chunk macadamia nut cranberry tonight. So I'm going to have an assortment of cookies on Friday at the Fish Fry that the St. Louis County Health Department will probably come in and confiscate from me. But until they do that, if you come up to see us and say, hi, I'd like a cookie, you can get a cookie.
That's awesome.
I know. A little added incentive. But I got a little baking to do tonight. You know, the dough is chilling. That's a very important part of my process. I want you to know
it
that.
It is, actually.
My white chocolate chips last night, they didn't flatten out as much as I wanted them to. Mm. I'm not sure what
That's
happened
okay.
there. Hey, they taste good, though.
Exactly.
We have, coming up a little bit later in the hour, Mizzou plays tomorrow night against the Drake Bulldogs. A lot of interest in that game because Drake has a great story. And Michael Admire, who's the voice of the Bulldogs, will join us here at 5:25. Plus, I have an audio cut of the day. And I have a bunch of audio that I have not gotten to yet on the show. So we'll certainly get through that. But we do have a roundtable set. We were a little worried about that on Friday. Jane is not going to be there, so she had to travel this weekend. State Rep Steve Butts. Donna Behringer will be here, who's running for a comptroller. And there's somebody else, and Ethan's probably yelling it at me right now, and I can't remember who the person on my side is. But we'll figure it out between now and Friday. Who is it? Oh, Lamping. Lamping's listening right now.
Yeah.
Former Senator
He's going,
Lamping's
wait,
gonna be
me?
Here. Hey, John Seiler is back with us. He is the Director of Higher Education Policy and a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. He's done just amazing work over the last few years on exposing a lot of these DEI situations and bans. But now, John, there's something kind of different because since you have these race-conscious programs in states where, as you put it, such race consciousness is illegal, what do people do? Well, they skirt the bans, don't they? How are you this evening?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, these as we've seen, university administrators, they still want to do what they've always been doing. And so there's plenty still to investigate when it comes to states that have pushed back on DEI policies in higher education and elsewhere.
And some of this is kind of like you can kind of cross-pollinate a little bit with DOGE because you're going to talk about a $10 million National Science Foundation grant that has faced this dilemma because this is a group that is trying to recruit minority doctors, right?
Yeah, so that's a good introduction to the story. The story that I've written two stories now about this program funded through the federal government, through the National Science Foundation, kind of our premier funder of the sciences. And the program is designed to recruit minority, what they're referred to as postdoctoral fellows. And it's this clever model that we've actually talked about before, where universities set up a program where they recruit people to become fellows rather than full professors. And so it kind of bypasses the normal faculty hiring process that's very competitive, and a lot of people pay attention, close attention to it. This is a postdoctoral fellowship. So really, I've been told by professors, nobody really pays attention to how postdoctoral fellows are hired. And that's definitely true. And so what this program does is it gives $10 million to a bunch of state universities. And it's explicitly set up to create these programs at universities that don't have them, specifically in the University of North Carolina system, the University of Texas system, and the university, the Texas A&M university system. And so, you know, supposedly those three systems are supposed to create these programs that recruit minority postdocs and then transition them into full tenure track faculty positions. Yeah. So basically bypassing
it's
the
an
normal
end run.
Process.
Right.
In three states, or in two states that are very important. These are two states that actually kind of led the charge on pushing back against DEI.
Yeah, look, I remember talking to you in North Carolina. That was one of the big victories early on, I think, is when they peeled some of that back. So you're talking, John, about this group is called Rise Up with two P's. It's Reimagining STEM Equity, Utilizing Postdoctoral Pathways. That's a bit of a mouthful. That's the big $10 million grant. That's what it went to. So essentially what you described here is an end run around some of the DEI bans. Is there a way to stop the end run? That's the next question, I guess.
Well, you know, here's the thing. At the state level, what needs to happen is there needs to be a lot more attention paid to what programs still exist, because it shouldn't be a surprise to anybody who is in the administration that you have this funding from the federal government and that this funding is set aside to do, you know, what they've said it's supposed to do. The you know, university has access to all of the grants that that are involved in pouring money into the institution, so they should know. And because they should know this, you know, people involved with compliance really have no excuse. And I guess they're just leaving the job to me to go and find these programs that already exist. But I mean, the elephant in the room is that this is a federally funded program. This is $10 million being spent by a sub-agency within the NSF that's devoted to equity, and it's being spent on a program designed to recruit and then hire what they refer to as minoritized, that just means racial minority or a specific subset of racial minorities, minoritized postdocs and eventually university faculty members. I mean, this is textbook DEI. And it's actually quite interesting that it hasn't just been blown away by DOGE and by the various executive orders that really should mean that this doesn't exist.
Yeah, but
it should not be a policy.
John, I want you to get in more specifics here because your reporting is really good. And you talk about what happened in May, I think it was May of last year, where you had these Rise Up people that conducted what you referred to as a reverse site visit. And then, you know, some of the language that relates to identity politics sort of gets exposed here, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And so I obtained... a large trove of records related to this program. It was really an astounding number of records. And one of them, or several of them, pertain to this meeting that the main team of administrators from universities that were running these programs and who had received the grants, where these administrators were giving a long kind of evaluative presentation to a panel appointed by the NSF. And that panel was really there to decide, to kind of assess the program's progress and actually, you know, decide whether they're going to continue to fund the program or whether they needed to amend the program somehow. And one of the records that I obtained was really interesting because this NSF appointed panel they basically pressed the team and said, why are you not talking more about how the STEM disciplines are rooted in white European colonial norms?
Mm-hmm.
They said,
course.
You know, this is a problem. Why are you not addressing it more? And what's really interesting is that the team actually provided an answer. They said, well, we absolutely agree that this is a big problem. They even use the term, they say that STEM is rooted in cis patriarchal
of course.
Norms, that,
yeah.
that, you know, non-transgender patriarchal norms. And they say, this is a problem, but we're not going to talk about it, or at least publicly, we're going to downplay that aspect of our program and that kind of theoretical underpinning, because some of our members are in states that are pushing back against DEI, and we don't want this to happen. And that's really a snapshot of this behind-the-scenes glimpse that I got of the program, where publicly they've tried to scrub their the sort of DEI elements from how they carry out the program, but privately they remain very much committed to the sort of race-conscious ethos that is just plastered all over this project, and that they really can't escape from.
But if I was, you know, Anderson Cooper or someone on CNN, and thank God I'm not, I would say, John Seiler, all we're trying to do, aren't these universities simply trying to give minorities an opportunity to get into these tenure track positions? What's so wrong with that? What's so wrong with diversity, equity, and inclusion? We're just trying to help some folks out there.
Yeah, so I think that, like, a lot of people for a long time, we're really sympathetic to this. This is one reason why it took a long time for conservative lawmakers to really take this issue seriously. And there are sort of layers to the issues that I would point out. So most basically, hiring on the basis of race is illegal.
Right.
It's illegal not just per these state laws that ban DEI. It's illegal per Title VII of the Civil Rights Act. You cannot discriminate on the basis of race in hiring. So on its face, it just shouldn't be happening. It doesn't even have to be a big moral debate. But if you want to get into the big moral debate, I think a lot of people, a plurality of the country, whenever you take polls on this, say that this kind of affirmative action, these racial preferences in deciding who gets important positions, that the people oppose that. And people oppose it because there's a sense that this is unfair, and they really agree with the principles articulated in kind of the civil
Absolutely.
Rights movement, the
yeah.
colorblind principle.
I even saw some polling on this today, which you know, a majority of Americans said, no, we don't, you know, approve of that. Now, I also think, I would argue this, John, you might agree. I think the number would be higher if people were more informed about what some of this stuff really is, because I still hear people, even the folks on CNN like Aaron Burnett and others, that don't really seem to have a full, complete understanding of how nefarious some of this stuff is. And one thing that you point out, by the way, in your reporting before I let you go, is that when you were talking about Texas A&M, you exposed them a little bit with the Rise Up program, but then they scrubbed something from their website?
Yeah, so I wrote two pieces about the program. In the first piece, I point out that, well, they have a web page for Rise Up, the fellowship. They advertise that this fellowship is the only people who are eligible are people who are committed to diversity. And they also say, you know, they have kind of a list of things that the fellows should be committed to. Diversity is one of them. Another is social justice. After I published that article, before I published this next one just earlier this week, I looked at the webpage again, and they've scrubbed the word social justice. They've scrubbed the word diversity. But it's still pretty clearly a program designed to only hire people who have a particular posture towards what they say in the job advertisement now is underserved communities. And that should raise some red flags.
Keep on them, Seiler. You're doing great work here. John Seiler, the Director of Higher Education Policy and a Senior Fellow at the Manhattan Institute. Always great stuff. Thank you, John. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
That is great. And yeah, there's a lot of
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code SHAVE at checkout. That's harrys.com, code SHAVE. Enjoy!
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's going on in a lot of this? Sue, we're going to segue into a little NCAA tournament talk here in just a moment, but I wanted to focus on something that I saw in the Wall Street Journal here a couple of days ago from an athlete. We hear from, you know, certainly Riley Gaines. We've had other athletes who have been, you know, put in very uncomfortable positions because of Will Thomas and other athletes. We've seen this exposed in Maine recently with some high school athletes, right? And some people trying to take a stand. So there is a woman by the name of Mina Svard, who is, I believe, Swedish, who wrote a piece. It's a very short piece in the Wall Street Journal about how she was essentially a victim in all this. And she said, it's been 3 years since swimmer Leah Thomas, born William, won the gold medal in the 500-yard freestyle at the NCAA Division I Women's Championship. It wasn't until the release of President Trump's February 5th executive order keeping men out of women's sports that the U.S. government established a clear policy protecting the integrity of female athletics. This step, while welcome, isn't enough, she says. The official results of past competition should be corrected to align with reality. This is a very interesting point, right? Male competitors should be removed and the rank of affected women increased accordingly. I've never really thought of it from this perspective, but I completely agree.
Yes.
Listen to how she explains it. She says, this is personal. Being honest about it here. In 2019, when I was a sophomore at East Texas A&M University, I was assigned second place in the finals of the NCAA Division II women's 400-meter hurdles. The video from that event shows me racing in lane 8. In lane 4 is C.C. Telfer of Franklin Pierce University, who competed for that school's men's team in 2016 and 2017. Craig Telfer ranked 390th among NCAA Division II men.
There you go.
C.C. Telfer destroyed the women's field and crossed the finish line almost 2 seconds before me, becoming the first known transgender-identified athlete to win an NCAA title. By the
way, that's fair.
Did you know the hurdles are different than they're lower for women
of
than
course.
Men?
Of course.
Right? So when you think about that, and she says that made me the first collegiate woman to be told her victory was worth less than a man's feelings.
Unbelievable.
She says, I cried a lot that day, not because I lost, but because of how I lost. I also knew I wasn't the only victim. Ugh. Every time a male athlete enters a female competition, a woman gets cut from the roster to make room. This is, why are we even talking about
it's
this?
It's ridiculous.
Men have enormous athletic advantages over women, as she say, which is why, as she said, which is why women's hurdles are 9 inches shorter than men's. Yeah.
Right.
I don't think I knew that. Olympic gold medal winning times for the men's 400 meter are about 5 seconds faster than for women. That's a difference of about 10%. That's an eternity in, you know, that or swimming or sports like that.
Yep.
She says, I'm a people pleaser and I don't like to upset people, a stereotypical female quality that trans activists often exploit to suppress dissent. It took me a year before I found the nerve to post my feelings about the race on Instagram. When C.C. Telfer alerted supporters to my post, I was denounced as a transphobe and a racist and received harassment and threats. C.C. Telfer went on to write a book and was profiled by the New York Times Magazine in an article titled, For My People, A Transgender Woman Pursues an Olympic Dream.
I just
threw up in my mouth a little bit. I really did. That dream collapsed in 2021 when he failed the testosterone test. She says, I don't expect I'll ever be profiled in a fawning magazine feature, but I did accomplish one thing that will always fill me with pride. In 2019, I was the fastest female 400-meter hurdler.
That's right.
Hurdler. At any Division II school. It's been 5 years since that honor was stolen from me. I want it back. And let me just say this. You know, we hear this excuse from the trans activists. Oh, there's only 9 athletes that this affects. I don't care if C.C. Telfer was the only man with a penis that took something away from women. I don't care.
100%.
It's enough to take it back. It's disgusting that anyone, and I mean anyone, would defend this. It's indefensible.
Yes.
And you know what? 98% of the people in this country know that. I mean, we talk about these 80-20 issues. I'm sick and tired of that. It's 98-2.
Pretty much.
And for those lefties that might think that they can, you know, die on that high horse, put yourself in the situation if your daughter was an athlete in high school, junior high school, or collegiate, and some dude with a penis wanted to take, listen to the standing. I want to repeat that again, because this was a dude that was 390th amongst NCAA Division II men, and then won the title. Oh, yeah, that's really super fair. We can explain that.
She
is proud. Mm-hmm. They are proud.
That's
because
what's so...
they call themselves women, so then they are women. It's revolting. And you know what? It's stopping a little bit. And I think that she's right. Take those awards back. You can also follow my bunny, Oreo, at Oreo Smario the Bunny on Instagram. He's got millions of followers at this point. I need to post on that damn account because I haven't done that in a couple of days. Big, big game tomorrow night. My Missouri Tigers against the Drake Bulldogs. And there's a lot of buzz about this game because Drake has a fascinating story. And Frank Cusimano, who is in Wichita and will join us on Friday afternoon, as he always does, has been kind of highlighting this story. And it really is kind of a fascinating story. Now, I don't want to give too much attention to Drake because I'm a Mizzou guy, but we have invited, just to talk about this, Michael Admire, who's the voice of the Drake Bulldogs basketball team, on with us tonight. Michael, how are you? Welcome to the show here in St. Louis.
Hey, yeah, appreciate it, Mark. I'm doing great. It's fun to be in the big dance, fun to be a part of this all, and yeah, just trying to soak it all up here in Wichita.
I would if I were you. I can't imagine how much fun it is, but I want to find out about this team a little bit. I want to go back a year because I think this is interesting. I've learned a lot about the current team, but if I'm not mistaken, this was a team that won the Missouri Valley Conference Tournament a year ago, and their coach left, and then they get the new coach, right?
Yeah, actually had won it the last 2 years. So this was a three-peat with Coach Mack coming in this year.
So the last coach, though, it was a Darian DeVries. Is that how you pronounce that?
Darian DeVries.
Okay. Yep. Did he leave because of his success, so he went to another program, or was he fired?
Yeah, so Darian DeVries basically took Drake from absolute mediocrity into the NCAA tournament, 20 plus wins in six straight seasons. So has all the success. And then he goes, he gets a job at West Virginia. He's at West Virginia for one season. I don't know if you heard the stuff this week where, you know, West Virginia gets snubbed from the NCAA
tournament. Oh, yeah.
The governor sues the NCAA committee, all that stuff. Well, Darian was just announced yesterday the new head coach at Indiana.
That's right. So, now, you see, you've helped me put the pieces together. I have heard about this stuff, but I didn't realize that was the dude. That makes a lot more sense. Interesting.
That's the guy. That's the dude.
All right. So I had a morning show partner many years ago, Rob Carson, still a friend. He went to Northwest Missouri State University. Maybe because of him, I've heard and I've seen his posts on Facebook over the years. I know how successful that Division II program has been. So now you can connect the dots because Drake goes in and gets the coach, not only the coach from Northwest Missouri State in Maryville, Missouri, but three of his players come over to Drake to play this season, correct?
Yeah, four of our starting five are all Division II Northwest Missouri State guys that Coach Mack brought over. So yeah, you got all these D2 guys, you know, Coach Mack and some of his assistants as well from Northwest Missouri State, bring them into the fold at D1 Drake University. You know, all those questions out there, can these D2 guys, you know, ball at the level that they need to at D1? And all they've done is go 30-3, win the Missouri Valley Conference. They beat an SEC school earlier this season,
Vanderbilt
by double digits and all that stuff. So yeah, you know a little bit of the story, and it really is incredible. I mean, when Darian left a year ago to go to West Virginia, you know, we're kind of wondering if we'd ever get back here, and if we would back to the NCAA tournament, when would it be? And you hire a winner in Coach Mack, who's built a culture, you know, won four national championships at the Division II level, really should have won a fifth if not for the pandemic season. And, you know, here he is now, his first year at D1, and he's kind of making it look easy.
Well, you better extend him because they're going to you win that game tomorrow night, and I hope you don't.
We're trying.
You better keep him. Now, these, you know, Frank Cusimano, I mentioned Frank's been talking about this, and he is in Wichita with you guys. He's talked about Drake. You know, certainly we had the conference tournament here, which is always a great thing in St. Louis. But were these kids, and I want you to talk about Bennett Sturz because he's got NBA potential, were they even recruited by Division I schools?
Not many of them. Yeah, Bennett had zero Division I scholarship offers out of high school. And again, he was a senior in the pandemic year. So he's kind of, you know, has this, you know, season where we're not playing a ton of, you know, high school basketball games. And if they are, the recruiting was weird that year. Now, there are a couple of factors that played into him kind of flying under the radar. But Coach McCollum has really good relationships with coaches in Kansas City. Bennett Sirtz's dad was the head coach at Liberty High School right outside of KC where Bennett played. So he plays for his dad. And, you know, his dad obviously advocated for him a little bit. But Coach Mack has a really good eye for talented point guards. And he was able to pull Bennett into Maryville, and they had success in the 2 years he was there. But, you know, he didn't play in any of those national championships. And honestly, he's made an incredible jump in development from where he was last year as a second team all-conference player in Division II to now being an honorable mention All-American.
That's amazing.
This year.
That really is.
It's really a testament to his hard work and character.
All right, but let me get real here, Michael, okay? I don't want you to take offense to this. Michael Admire, the voice of the Drake Bulldogs. I want you to assess this game. I want you to handicap this game. I know that Drake likes to slow it down. We do not. My prediction on Monday, and I don't want you to take this the wrong way because I was a little fired up. I said, the Tigers by double digits. F this upset talk. We're in the upper echelon of the SEC, and this team is in the MVC. Your response to that. Go.
I mean, I get it. You look at this Drake team, it's confounding how they're able to do what they do and play in all these close games. They have not been beaten by double digits this season in any of those three games.
Wow, that's incredible.
They went down to the Charleston Classic and won three games against Miami, FAU, and Vanderbilt, all by double digits, all by out-rebounding those three teams by a combined 36 rebounds, even though undersized. But still able to pull that off. In fact, Drake had only had two double-digit deficits this season. One was a 12-point deficit to Murray State. They do end up losing that game. But then they had a double-digit deficit at Arch Madness to Belmont, and they came back and won that game. So I think it's going to be close. That's my only thing. Maybe there's something that happens late where, you know, it bubbles into a double-digit win for Mizzou. But I truly feel like it's going to come down to the final few minutes.
I can't handle that, Michael. I can't. My nerves cannot handle that. I'm just telling you. Look, you got to have a little empathy for those of us on the Mizzou side. We've got Norfolk State on our resume. You know, we were a 2C. We got Northern Iowa back in the day, Xavier. So I can't take this and all this buzz about Drake. And look, I know how good they are, and I think it's an incredible story. I do think that the athleticism of Mizzou, especially if Mark Mitchell is fresh, of course, he sat out of those games last week, and I think he's healthy. Boy, he is a tough player, and Mizzou's defense is really, really sticky if given the chance. But good luck, and by the way, just have a blast with this, and if you do make it to the second round, I'm never going to want to talk to you again, just so you know.
No, it's all good, man. I love the way Mizzou plays. They play hard. The turnaround under Dennis Gates has been incredible. I do think it's going to be a fun game. I hope it is. I'm from Missouri. I grew up in Kansas City. I've got a bunch of family members that are Missouri Tigers through and through. So, this is going to be a fun one.
Well, Michael, have fun, really. I think both of these stories, as you know, Mizzou being 0-18 in the SEC and rebounding the way both these teams at the beginning of the season did not have a lot of NCAA tournament talk, but this is an incredible story, which is, I think, why the committee put this in prime time tomorrow night, right?
Absolutely. The storylines with the Missouri and Kansas connections between both programs, the storylines of Coach Mack coming from Missouri, at Northwest Missouri State, Dennis Gates, what he's done, SEC has been incredible this year. This feeds the storyline machine for sure.
Absolutely. Look at what happened last night with the buzzer beater. This is a blast, a fun time of year. Michael Admire, thank you so much. Have a great time this weekend, but not too great.
All right, man, I got you.
All right, man, I'm nervous.
I know you are.
I predicted, but I'm just telling every time, because these guys are good, and this Bennett Sturtz kid is for real.
Yep.
So he's probably right. It's going to go down.
When is the game?
It's tomorrow night at 6:30.
Okay.
So, hey, I wanted to get one more thing in here, just because I saw this earlier today, and I tweeted out about it. You know, when I went to Milwaukee, Sue, I went there in 1997, and I've kind of told the story this way. It was 3 months after Brett Favre won his first Super Bowl. And I'm a baseball guy, right? I come from St. Louis and from Missouri, and I'm focused on baseball. And I get up there in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and I work for the company. The Milwaukee Journal is Journal Communications. It used to be. Now it's all different. Scripps Howard bought them. So we were owned by the same company, the radio station I work for. There was barely any excitement about baseball. They were in the American League at the time, and it was kind of sad. Well, then they go to the National League. The ownership changes eventually. It was Bud Selig's daughter, Wendy, who's handed the team because he's the commissioner. A guy by the name of Mark Anastasio buys the club and turned them into a contender. But when I was in Milwaukee, you would not believe how much pain still exists from 1982 when we beat them in the World
Series. Seriously?
Absolutely. And one of the reasons is, because they had a hell of a team. Yeah. And they have a documentary that's coming out here that is about that 1982 team. And it's called Just a Bit Outside. Of course, Bob Uecker just passed away.
Don Sutton said it best. He said every player should have the privilege of playing in Milwaukee. 81, 82, there was a recession going on. We knew that the people were hurting. We were trying to give them something that they could hang on to.
And well, here we go, off and running.
Yeah, that was my former neighbor, Bud Selig. Bud lived just around the corner from where I did in Milwaukee. I got to know him very, very well. He loved radio. He was such a big radio guy. He always had his headphones on. But they feature Bud Selig and a lot of these famous players, Paul Molitor, Robin Yount.
That 82 season, it was chaotic.
It's a blue-collar town, and we were a blue-collar ball club.
Every single guy had his own way of being different.
Everybody thought that we were this band of crazy guys.
My goal in Milwaukee was to drink in every bar before my career was over.
Party all night, and then go out and bash him to death.
The movie is available for purchase on Amazon. They're doing some screenings at movie festivals, but here's how I'd like to know. I'd like to fast forward to the end of that and figure out how they ended, because it did not end well for the Milwaukee Brewers in 1982, thanks to the St. Louis Cardinals. But if you're a baseball fan, you might enjoy that. We're coming back with Audio Cut of the Day. My God, Scotty Werman just walked in and scared heck out of me as I played some Linda Ronstadt. I knew that you would like this one. This is for you, too. You know, I got home last night, and I was making cookies because that's what I do, right?
Oh, sure.
And I put on Linda Ronstadt, and I just listened to Linda Ronstadt for like 45 minutes to an hour, and I wanted to play that one. Scott Werman, what are you doing? What the heck are you doing here, by the way?
Down the street here doing a little
sports. So you just thought you'd come in and crash my studio
at the end of
the show,
that's
right?
What I do. See, I got to make your day.
It's disappointing, though, because honest to God, I would like to ask you a few questions about the sports world, but I don't have time to do that right now.
I just want to say hi to you and Susan. That's
all. It's good to see you. It
Hello.
Really, hey, the Blues are like on fire right
They're
now, aren't
going
they?
Crazy, dude. It's unbelievable.
Do they play, when do they play next? Tomorrow night?
They play Vancouver tomorrow night, and that's for the eighth spot in the playoff tomorrow at 6:35, by the way.
And am I hearing that someone who's injured might be back sooner than we anticipated?
Yes. In fact, Joey Vitale will be my guest on Sports of Malign down the street.
Oh,
we'll talk a little bit about that.
I don't know what that
is. Nice.
I can't
I'm teasing the other station,
guy.
Ethan.
Yeah. I don't remember the frequency of the other station, even though it's being blasted on our airwaves nonstop because of this FM thing. Why don't
That's
we just
100% accurate.
I don't hear my name. Hey, you better name this show over there. It's only fair.
I'll drop it.
Just drop it in somehow.
I will.
I was talking to my friend Mark Reardon on the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk. You got to get everything in, though.
I'll drop
it. Okay.
Yep.
Hey, good to see you.
All right, buddy.
Let's talk baseball next week. How does that sound?
You got it. Yep.
All right. I
got
to do this here.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
So we played this a little earlier in the show, but I want to start with this guy. And it's just a guy that was at the doctor, the dentist, and he comes out to the place where he parked his Tesla Cybertruck, and it's just completely destroyed. I mean, there's graffiti all over it. There's paint. The windows are,
it's ridiculous.
It was ridiculous. So here's his description.
So now I'm in the back of the dentist's office. Doctor's office, so they can show me the cameras. Now my car is destroyed. Like, bro, I swear to God, you can ask Tiny. You can ask everybody. Every time I ride my car, they be like, bro, I love your car. I just hate the dude that make it. I don't give a... Bro, I don't... What the f*** do I have to do with Eli?
Thank you.
I like the car because it's a nice little car. It's unaverage. This is crazy. Look at this. Imagine riding around with... I'm riding around with my son in this car. I don't have my camera. I don't have nothing. I'm straight using my god phone, bro.
Yeah, it's really disgusting. And then, let's say that guy tunes into Jimmy Kimmel last night. To his point, what the hell did he do?
Nothing.
He could hate Elon Musk and Trump. That's not why he bought the car, right?
Vandalizing Tesla vehicles, new Tesla vehicles. Please don't vandalize. Don't ever vandalize Tesla vehicles. And so,
yeah, he gave a little wink, wink there. Are you kidding me? And then there's Tim Walz.
On my phone, I don't. Some of you know this on the iPhone. They've got that little stock app. I added Tesla to it to give me a little boost during the day. 225 and dropping. So, and if you own one, we're not blaming you. You can take dental floss and pull the Tesla thing off, you know, and take out, just telling you.
Bill Malusian was reporting today as the governor of Minnesota gloats about Tesla stock dropping. Records showed that the Minnesota State Board of Investment shows that as of last summer, the state of Minnesota had 1.6 million shares of Tesla in its retirement fund and 211 shares of Tesla in the non-retirement fund. So I guess Tim Walz is rooting against the success of his own. He is such a clown. Oh, my God, were we saved from disaster there. Have a great night, Sue.
You too.
We'll talk tomorrow at 3:00.